Hello, my name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wigs and Candles, a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
We want to dig into some of our favorite period films and review them, find out why we love them, and what effect they have on us.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wigs and candles.
In this episode, Emma and Emma.
This time we were very ambitious and adventurous, Nene. We want to discuss not only one film, but two.
Yes, we are reviewing two versions of the same story. Emma by Jane Austen, of course. But on the one hand, we have the adaptation from 1996, starring Gwyneth Paltrow. And on the other hand, we have the latest version from 2020, starring Anya Taylor-Joy.
Nene, this was indeed a challenge, especially a time challenge, to finish two films on time. But it was a double treat for our period film loving soul, and I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, it was like when you can't decide between cookies and cake and you have to take both. Or for me, you can't decide between cookies and panettone. Or cookies and, a shortbread, which is two delicious things, so you take them both.
Yes, very greedy.
All right, so Gabby, can you please give us a short summary of the most important facts about both films?
Sure, Nene, with pleasure. Let me start with the old Emma, the old version. 1996 Emma was directed by Douglas McGrath, who also wrote the script. It stars, as we mentioned, Gwyneth Paltrow as Emma, Jeremy Northam as Mr. Knightley, and Toni Collette as Harriet Smith, just to mention a few. An interesting fact that I found while researching for the podcast, Miss and Mrs. Bates are played by Sophie Thompson and Phyllida Law, who are Emma Thompson's sister and mother, respectively. The director got their names on separate pages, and he didn't really put them together, also because their last names are different. So he casted them both. I found it very interesting.
It's amazing.
So this film was... it played very well in the box office, but it wasn't like an award sweeper. It won the Oscar for Best Original Musical or Comedy Score by a woman named Rachel Portman. And it was nominated by Best Costume Design, done by Ruth Meyers, but she went empty-handed. Mm-hmm. Now, turning to the newer version of Emma, the version from 2020, this film was directed by Autumn de Wilde. She's an American photographer, and she has portrayed many, many famous artists, just to mention a few, Beck and the White Stripes, for their CD covers. Wow. And she has also directed a lot of music videos. So Emma was her debut as a film director. Chapeau. She did it really great.
Wow.
The screenplay was also written by a woman, by Eleanor Catton, and the movie stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Emma, Bill Nighy as her father, Mr. Woodhouse, and Johnny Flynn as Mr. Knightley. It was nominated for the Oscars in the categories of Best Costume Design, also done by a woman, Alexandra Byrne, and Best Makeup and Hairstyling, done also by a women's team, Maurice Langan, Laura Orlin, Allen, and Claudia Stolze. They didn't win any, but the nomination was, I guess, recognition enough. Anya Taylor-Joy was nominated for the Golden Globes as Best Actress.
Well, thank you, Gabby, for all those incredible facts. There's so many interesting points that you have already made. So we see there's a lot of women working on these two films, which we love a team led by women, you and I.
Yes. Nene, now it's your turn. Can you give us a summary of the plot?
Yes, thank you, Gabby. So I will tell you the plot of the novel, which is adapted almost identically by the two movies. So Emma was published in 1815, and it was Jane Austen's fourth novel. Emma tells the story of Emma Woodhouse, a young, beautiful, highly privileged girl who fancies herself a matchmaker. After successfully matching her governess with Mr. Weston, a widower, she sets herself the task of matching her friend, Harry Smith, with the local vicar, Mr. Elton. In the process, she creates multiple complications and misunderstandings, all the while meeting more matchmaking subjects or potential suitors. For example, family good friend Mr. Knightley, the charming but mysterious Frank Churchill, as well as numerous ladies about town. In the end, Emma learns a lesson or two about prejudice, perceptions, friendship, and love.
Great, Danny. You are always so good to summarize it.
Well, I don't want to give everything away.
Away.
Just in case somebody hasn't read the novel or seen the movie, so they can find out when they watch it.
Exactly right. So let's start with the conversation. And to do that, let me ask you one question. Emma is the center of this universe created in both films or in the novel. So I guess we definitely have to start discussing the performance of each Emma. Can you describe your impressions on Gwyneth and Anya? Which Emma did you enjoy more?
Woo. Gabby, what a great question. And I think any discussion of these two movies has to center on this very key question, which is, you know, the lead actress that was chosen to portray the character and how each of them did it. So thank you for starting with that. I have to say that ever since I watched the very first Emma, which was probably when it came out originally, I'm pretty sure I watched it either in 96 or 97. Pretty soon after, Gwyneth was at the peak of her beauty and kind of like she was the new ingenue in Hollywood. And she was the most, she was a dream. She was the girl you aspired to be. Looking at the two movies, I always, before the 2020 version existed, I thought that this Emma, this movie in particular, was for me kind of faultless. And I think I really, really had enjoyed Gwyneth's performance at the time. I remember it being very, it was like the girl I aspired to be when I was 20. It was, it's very sad because I'm a Venezuelan girl that, you know, short, dark hair, much heavier than Gwyneth, but she was the person I aspired to be. So it's a little sad, but anyway, so for many, many, many years, there was only one Emma to me, and she was Gwyneth Emma because I hadn't seen it on any other adaptations. So she was my only model. Mm. She was my only impression. And then you bring in the 2020, and I was skeptical. I was quite skeptical. It's like, oh, a new Emma. How can you improve on almost perfection? Which I thought Emma, Gwyneth. You know, her performance was perfect. And I love period film, so I watched it and I enjoyed it. But if I compare the two, I still like Gwyneth Paltrow's Emma much more. And I don't know if you want to go first and then we discuss why.
Okay.
Which one did you enjoy more?
Let me try to formulate this correctly. I enjoyed both films so much. I watched first the older version with Gwyneth Paltrow. I watched it back then when it came out, and of course now for the podcast again. And I have to say that it took me a while to get used to Gwyneth again. Now, nearly 25 years later, to see her as Emma and to see her as Gwyneth Paltrow. It took me a while to get into the mood and to get into her performance, to forget the actress Gwyneth and get into her Emma. Mm. But it was gone. This feeling of, okay, this is really Gwyneth Paltrow, you know. It was gone after a while. And when I saw the second film with Anya Taylor-Joy, which I think is she's also a beautiful woman, and I liked her so much in The Queen's Gambit. That's the only other feature production that I know from with Anya Taylor-Joy. For me, it was two completely different persons. Completely different persons. Gwyneth Emma is really everybody's darling in Highbury, in the town where the story plays, and you get to know why. She was delicate, she was polite, she was thoughtful, intelligent, talented, kind. She was kind to everybody. While the second Emma, pretty much until half of the film, came through like a very arrogant and obnoxious rich girl. That's my impression. So
yeah.
up to half of the film, I guess at the pretty much when she finds out that she is maybe losing Mr. Knightley, where things start getting serious for her, then she gets a little bit more depth and she drops this mascara of being arrogant and starts being a little bit more human. Then you kind of have more feeling and you can connect more with a character. But up until that moment, for me, she was just an arrogant
Emma. Yeah. And I think we have to be very, very careful here to distinguish between the performance and the likability of the character. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we stay on the likability, which is an issue that a lot of movies have and novels and works where the public demands likability, where, you know, characters do not have to be likable, right? So I think if we stay on the likability, which is not required, but how it's presented, obviously the first Emma, as portrayed by Gwyneth, is a very likable character. So she's redeemed her mistakes, her you know, her blindness to what she's causing to the chaos. she's kind of causing chaos everywhere she goes a little bit. It's because she's really authentic in her actions. You can see motivation. She really feels like she's doing good and she has real kindness. And it's true. I think the key word is kindness. She's a kind person by nature. She's kind to her father. Mm. She's kind to everybody around her, to the servants, obviously to her friend Harriet Smith, who is an orphan, or we don't know her origins. We don't know who her parents are, but she embraces her completely.
Mm.
So likability, definitely Gwyneth Emma is a much more likable Emma. Anya Taylor's Emma has no redeeming qualities whatsoever. On top of being,
at the beginning.
So I had made some notes and what I had written for her was like, she's harsher, not as warm, not as kind. She's much more unlovable and unlikable. And for me, it seemed like for the second Emma, for Anya Taylor's Emma, everything was more like a game. But to what end?
To what end?
So I couldn't understand the motivation. Wherefore the win it's Emma. I can kind of see the motivation. She really thought that she was doing good. That she was doing good, trying to improve Harry's situation, perhaps. Still clueless about the chaos that she's unleashing to the world because of her privilege. She doesn't see what she's doing because her privilege doesn't allow her to see it. But that's likability. If I go back to performance, which is a different thing, because this is a character that you have been given to play.
I wanted to say.
As it has been written.
Written for you, yes.
The 1996 Emma is written as kind, very warm, well-meaning, where the 2020 Emma is not written like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So if we talk about performance, each of them did an amazing job with the character as it was written. However, I do enjoy the warmth of Gwyneth. She seems to me much more believable in a way than the second Emma. But I think it's just because the tone of the movies are so different. So they're playing completely different levels, like tones.
Yes. Although I have to say, I completely agree. They just play what they were written, what they were given as a script, as a character. Totally agree. Nevertheless, the credibility of the second Emma, of the newest Emma, is hard to buy as a viewer. Because if she's really so, she was very well aware of her status and kind of, she didn't like to humble it. She was showing it proudly. And as I said, I had the impression that she was also, to Harriet, her best friend, being a little bit obnoxious. So it's a little bit difficult to believe as a viewer, why was she so beloved in the town by society if she was not the nicest, not the nicest person to have around, you know? And she was, So then you have like, okay, everybody loves her, but why?
Yeah.
She might be a little bit ruthless or a little bit more, you know, self-confident. So why everybody loves her? That's something that I had my struggles with. Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. It's not believable. It's not like, to what end? I don't see her motivation, and why do people think she's so great? And so which one did I enjoy more? I enjoy Gwyneth's Emma much more as a character. Because she was privileged, rich, but there was a true humanity underneath. Where this Emma, I don't see the humanity until much later. I agree that we do see a transformation. We do see a softening. We do see something coming through her. But at the beginning, she's ice cold, and I see nothing. I do not understand why she has to be this way. Even with Harriet, she's not
even
nice
with
to her.
Harriet. She's not Harriet. Nice. She's supposed to be best friends, and she is a little bit, you know, like you get the impression she's a little bit annoyed by Harriet's presence, or she finds herself a little bit dull. So it's questionable, why is she really putting so much effort on this matchmaking for her so-called best friend?
Yeah.
If she doesn't really like her that much.
Yeah.
It's somehow hard to believe. And I have to say, even though I like Anya Taylor's Joy a lot, as I said, I enjoy her so much in The Queen's Gambit. She's a young actress, and she's certainly very good in what she does. Mm-hmm. But she definitely has a long way before her. She is very much Anya Taylor Joy. If you see her in two different productions, you see her as an actress. And so she's putting too much of her own imprint on her gestures, on her.
Oh, wow.
And not letting so much the character be the character and take over her, you know?
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I haven't seen The Queen's Gambit yet, so.
Okay, I can only refer to this. But, you know, there are a few actors and actresses, this is an art. This is not something that everybody can do as well. I was talking about it yesterday with my husband about it because I consider that this is really the highest art to, as an actor, portray your character so much that the viewer doesn't recognize you as the actor who's playing this, who's performing this. And there's only very few who can do this. So like Daniel Day-Lewis, whatever he plays, you don't know how Daniel Day-Lewis is as a person or as an actor, because every time he's completely transformed into the character he's playing. So of course, I'm maybe putting the standard a little bit too high for Anya Taylor-Joy.
At this moment, she's only 25.
And I am pretty sure she has the potential to get there. But of course, as I said, these 2 hours, I was constantly facing her. And I had to, I had my struggles to get, this is really Emma. This is supposed to be Emma.
Wow. Yeah, I did not have so much that issue as just the motivation of the character. I didn't get the character. I didn't understand what does she want by being so arrogant and so, what's the word? She's just so above everybody, and she has this attitude all the time. So she's a much, and she can be that way, but we need to understand. And I think, I don't know if it's too early to make this comparison. There's and this is the scene that I, this is a particular scene that made the difference for me between deciding which one I enjoy more and I believe more. And there's a scene which is a very important scene, which is a picnic scene. It's a very pivotal scene in the story, in which they all go together to a picnic. Emma, Harriet, Mr. Knightley, and a group of other people, including Miss and Mrs. Bates, who are an older lady and her daughter. They're poor and getting poorer. Miss Bates she's unmarried and will most likely remain so. So she's viewed as having very low status, like her situation is not the greatest. And during that picnic scene, Emma is very unkind to Miss Bates, who is a friend. We have seen Emma visit them, bring them food, inquire about them. Yes, she's a little unknown, but she still is very kind to them. And the way this scene is, I think it's a direction, but also an acting issue. And I just watched that scene. I just watched both of them. In the first movie with Gwyneth, we can see that before she makes that very nasty comment to Miss Bates, she's been annoyed. She's angry because a couple of characters have said something to her. So she's already getting a little defensive. And when Miss Bates starts talking and she says, yes, yeah, you have to just say three dull things. Don't say, but only three. And you can see that the reason she did that is because she has already become annoyed. She's like, by something that's happening while the other people are not realizing. And she has this reaction.
Yes.
In the new one, you see none of that nuance. You see her just be mean for being mean. And I think that for me right there, that lack of nuance in that scene says everything about these two performances and how the character is portrayed. Because here you can see that the kindness is still there. But, we are all prone to saying nasty things or mean things to people we love in moments of, anger or sadness. But in the second Emma, there's nothing underneath it. She's just being cruel.
Yes.
And for me, this is a scene that defines, like, to me, this was achieved much better than in the second one.
Totally. So the first point goes to, I'm going to take some notes. I'm gonna keep score. So you give the first point to Gwyneth.
Oh yeah.
Me too.
I'm sorry. I think she there's much more nuance, I think, throughout the performance.
And even if we develop that part, if we put this as a pivotal moment in the story and her experience, and her development through the story, afterwards she has to apologize to Miss Bates in both films.
Yeah,
they both Emmas get told off by Miss Knightley and they get back conscious, so they have to apologize to Miss Bates. So then we see the how Gwyneth Emma regrets it so badly and how ashamed she feels. You feel it much more. You get this real shameful feeling so much. As for the second Emma, it looks as if she's just doing it just because she has to do it, because it's the right thing, but not because she honestly feels like she did something wrong.
Very good point. So we are not giving people too much context here if they haven't read the book or seen the movie. After she's mean to Miss Bates, she gets told off by her good friend, Mr. Knightley, who's a good family friend, is about her, well, a little bit older than her, and they trust each other. And he's very sincere with her, and he tells her, "You were cruel to your friend." And the first Emma Gwyneth, we can see the regret so deeply, the shame she feels, and when she apologizes as well. And for Anya Taylor's Emma, I think she's more humiliated by the fight she has with Mr. Knightley than the regret of what she has done.
She gets mad that she got told off by Mr. Knightley, not because she did something wrong.
Exactly. And she says, "Go to the carriage," and she's just crying. Yeah, but I think it's just the humiliation of being told off by him more than you can feel. Gwyneth's Emma just regretting, like, I'm a good person, and I actually respect those two ladies, and I did something not very nice. And yeah, you can see all the emotions. I mean, say what you want to say about Gwyneth Paltrow, she is good.
She was very good.
She was very good.
Nene, a very, very good point. That's exactly how we should describe it. And we have to say that this scene of Anya Taylor's joy in the carriage saying go.
That's
it was good. That was really good. That was
good.
Really, really good.
It's a good.
It's a good touch.
We're gonna get to the good things.
Okay, let me switch to another topic, Nene, which I find very interesting. One of the core topics of this story is society hierarchies, and status and financial security. This is an ongoing topic also in pretty much all Jane Austen's novels. So one of the main drivers on the plot of Emma is trying to find a better match for her friend Harriet, who's interested in just a regular farmer, let's put it like that. How do you think this issue is portrayed in both films? How does Emma from 1996 deals with this? Okay, we're in a society with different class levels. How does she deal with that? And how does the 2020 version of Emma deals with this? Okay, I'm rich, but I want to help my not so well-situated friend. How do they deal with that?
Oh, Gabby, that's such a good question, because I'm just going to address the question overall first, because I have to think about the difference between the films first. But I can say that with my limited knowledge of history and British history and, the status of women at the beginning of the 18th century in England and in the Western world, Emma always struck me as a very unusual character that I didn't understand. I think we often forget that there are exceptions and richness and diversity throughout history in how people lived. I think this is something that we often forget, and that I think it's just history, how it's written, make us forget. We make sweeping statements about periods, entire periods, when people live million different lives. So mm-hmm. for me, Emma always struck me as unusual, somebody I couldn't understand. She's the most beautiful, she's the most gorgeous, and she's not interested in marriage. Now, older, I understand. Emma, this is brilliant. This is a brilliant comment on society of the time by Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. Emma is so privileged that she does not need to marry.
Mm-hmm. I have a quote on that.
Oh, you got a quote. Give me the quote.
I'm going to give you the quote because I loved it. And it comes in the first film. There's a scene of Emma and Harriet, her best friend, who went to the town to visit a poor lady who was sick. A poor lady and a family. And Emma, this is just another, how they want to show how kind and how
charity,
perfect.
Charity. You had to show
charity. Yeah. She was doing charity. So she went to this little house, this little hut, to visit the old lady and her family. And she brings soup and she talks to the old lady and so on. So after they make this visit, they leave the house. They both leave the house. And they walk by the house of Mr. Elton, the vicar. And they chat about this. They chat about Mr. Elton and Marian and so on. And Emma tells Harriet the following. I lack neither fortune nor position. A single woman of good fortune is always respectable. Because she was asked by Harriet, why don't you want to marry? I said, I lack neither fortune nor position. I don't need to marry.
I do not need to marry. Can you say the last part again?
A single woman of good fortune is always respectable. So along the fortune was already like, okay, she doesn't need to save her. To care for her virtue. She's good fortune. She's always respectable.
Yes. Oh, this is brilliant. It is so brilliant. So again, it takes us back to Emma is so privileged that she's so privileged that she doesn't need to marry. Marriage is a transaction. Yes, there was marriage of love, a lot of marriage, you know, and we see that a lot of the unions in these movies and Jane Austen's books are marriages of love. But at the time, marriage was a contract.
Totally.
Financial contracts between families and people and, you know, just to secure states and simply secure a living. And we've talked about this throughout all pretty much every episode that we've done in this podcast so far. So for me, this was mind-blowing to finally understand, my goodness, okay, that's why she doesn't consider, why is she trying to marry people off? But she's still a puzzling character. She's still, you know, I guess, yeah, she's still, and I haven't studied this novel, so I don't know what throughout history what people have analyzed the novel, like, why is she doing this? Is this charity? Why is she trying to, like, I love how you worded your question, that she's trying to find a better match for her friend Harriet. Because
she's aware of her status, very well aware. Otherwise, she wouldn't have said that. Yeah. I know that I have fortune and position.
Yeah, but she's so mistaken. She's so wrong. Because what we have established here is that Harriet, she was doing perfectly fine on her own. Harriet had received a marriage proposal from a farmer who is not a poor farmer. He was a tenant of Mr. Knightley's estate. He was well off. He had a family. He could provide. He was going to provide a full farm, beautiful sisters, very respectable, like a gentleman. But for Emma, he's not at all. I think she's enacting fantasies. Like maybe she's so disconnected from the real plight of people.
Which is weird because she does charity, so she knows.
Well, exactly.
She knows all the levels.
In both, especially in the first movie, there's a long scene when Harry and Win and Emma go to this poor people's house, and Emma is shown to be completely at ease, serving soup, taking the babies, and she's completely authentic. She's completely authentic. Where Harriet, who's supposed to be of a lower status, she's completely clumsy. She cannot perform charity. I think the fact that Emma can do all of these things is telling of her status, because you're supposed to do charity when you have money. Where Harriet, she does not know how to behave.
Maybe because she's always trying to reach the higher level, and she doesn't want to deal with the poor, sick people. Maybe.
Well, exactly. She's trying to get out of
that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's trying to. But where Emma, he has nowhere to go. She's reached the highest level. It's very interesting. I do not know how to answer your question. I do not know how to answer your question about hierarchy status. I think both films, I made an observation when I was watching both, and I think it has to do with humility. And I think it's very 2020. I'm going to start with the 2020. I think it's very 2020 to show people abusing their privilege, because the word privilege has become a key word in the fight for social justice and people acknowledging their privilege. So this has become a very important word in the 2020s and the 2010s about people, even people of color, Black people, acknowledge whatever privilege they have in reference to other people. So I think the 2020 film is very much on the nose about how these people do not even realize how they're behaving. And I think there's an opening scene in the second film, in the newer film, that's brilliant, where we see Mr. Knightley getting dressed. And it's a fantastic scene. And I think he walks into his stage and the people are helping him, or either take his clothes off and then put his clothes on, and he just walks out. These are people that are massively rich and privileged. And this is much more in your face than in the 1996 film. In the 1996 film, these are people shown to be genteel people, you know. Yes, there was slavery happening on the other side of the world, and England had a big part to play. But, you know, these people, you know, these are good British people, very kind, doing charity. And we are not reminded all the time of their privilege. Where in this one, the way they treat this, in the 2021, how they treat the servants, much more
differentiated.
So I think that's an interesting point to make. 1996 makes excuses for this lifetime,
yes.
Right? It is a fantasy for us.
A more royal friendly.
Oh, friendly, harmless portrayal of this society, where the 2021 is showing us these people are so privileged that they don't even realize, you know, the harms that they're causing other people.
Yes, that's a good point, Lily. It's a very good point. So we made that clear. The 2020 version goes a little bit more critical with this question and differentiates it a little bit more. Yes, I think also on the we described the scene before. We haven't described the scene. There's maybe also something that we have to mention. Harriet, as you said, she has an interest for Mr. Martin, who's a farmer, but Emma wants to drive her away from this idea, and this is what she goes along with her plan of matching Harriet with the vicar, with Mr. Elton, which of course doesn't work out at all. So at the very end, she recognizes that maybe she did a mistake and that she has to let Harriet follow her heart. And she tries to find a way to reconciliate with Mr. Martin. So in the second film, in the 2020 film, there's a scene that's not portrayed in the other one, where she visits Mr. Martin to kind of show him please go ahead.
Yeah.
And meet Harriet. And there we see how uneased she felt by walking into the farm.
Yes.
She wasn't very comfortable with walking into the farm and meeting Mr. Martin. So there's a little bit more that you get abism. So between her
and Mr. Martin. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you are very right. She, and see how much emphasis was put on the 1996 film and on Emma's ability to just blend in with the poor, with the lower classes, to just blend in and be as warm, as kind, as comfortable, as charming in every situation, where 2020 Emma is definitely not. And I think it goes to what the example you gave earlier when she goes to apologize to Miss Bate as well. She's not as comfortable. The 1996 Emma is the kind of person that can adapt to every situation.
Every situation.
And can talk to anybody. It's like an Obama. The Obama that can talk to, you know, the presidents, the kings, and then to the little boy in the basketball court when he goes meet them, and the cleaners. That's Emma, and that's an ideal type of rich person. Right?
Exactly.
Where the second Emma, the 2020, she's not comfortable at all.
She's not comfortable at all with the situation.
Wow.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good, Nene.
Have we answered this question?
We have answered. I'm going to give the second Emma 1 point for that, for a little bit more critical with the class, society's depiction. Nene, how about we now play a game?
Okay.
We do two films, so we will have a double rating. And I thought we can make it on several issues.
Okay.
Then we make the rating. Then we rate a few things. So I'm gonna name either a character or a topic, and you're gonna tell me for you who was the winner.
Oh my God! Okay.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with Mr. Elton. Mr. Elton, just as we mentioned before, he was the vicar of the town, and he was also in the position of marrying. And at the beginning, Emma thought this would be a great match for her friend Harriet Smith. Mr. Elton is played by Alan Cumming in the 1996 version and by Josh O'Connor in the 2020 version. So, Nene. Tell me, which is your choice of Mr. Elton?
Are you kidding me? This game, I give up. I lose. I lost this game. Okay. My God, this is an impossible choice. Alan Cummings is a brilliant actor. He's been in like 300 movies and 200 plays and everywhere. And he's very funny. In the first one, Josh O'Connor. For people who might not know this actor, he played Prince Charles in The Crown. I think second or third season of The Crown. I don't remember.
Yeah.
He is very sexy. He's a very sexy vicar.
I haven't seen it like that, but I like that.
Well, yes, he's a very much sexier vicar than Alan Cummings. Alan Cummings is just, I think, much more humorous. He's much more humorous. Because Alan Cummings plays comedy very well. My goodness. I'll give it to Alan Cummings. I mean, come on. I'm sorry. Just O'Connor. Just had to work a lot. Just because Alan Cummings is Alan Cummings. I mean, I know. Yeah. Josh O'Connor, I'm going to give him. He's a sexy vicar because he's given this high vicar collar that is, and the swept
his curl hair.
Yeah, gorgeous hair. But I'm going to give it to Alan Cummings.
Alan Cumming. Very good.
What about you?
We have a score. It's also very, very tough for me because I like them both in their individuality. What I like about Alan Cummings was, as you mentioned, the humor that he played it with. And he has an advantage. He doesn't marry Harry Smith. We can say this maybe. Spoiler alert. He marries another woman who is very annoying, who nobody likes. So in the Alan Cumming Mr. Elton has this advantage that the woman he has to play with, that the wife he has to play with, was so great, and she was always interrupting him. So this play on between them, that she was always talking and she wanted to say something, but she always cut him off, was just amazing. And you could see how how diminished he was in that marriage.
Yeah. Oh, so brilliant.
To his advantage, he had a very cool sidekick.
Can you find the name of the actress? I can't find her name. She's just a renowned British actress. She's just brilliant as Mrs. Elton. She's a very annoying character, yeah. But she's played in the 1996 film, The Actress. She's a... You know, she's a very renowned, respected British actress, and she's just so good.
She's just so good. So, as I said, this is an advantage for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, of course, his character has a lot more to play with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We
yeah.
can figure out the name of the actress okay. later on. So, what I liked about Josh O'Connor, which you mentioned before, he played Prince Charles in The Crown, and I loved him as Prince Charles. I think he was, if we might make a comment just off the record, he was an amazing Prince Charles. So
yeah, he was.
So he, for me, he's great as an actor. What I liked about him is that his character was written more sparkly. He used to get more. He used to get mad. He was a little bit more aggressive, you know, yeah. and that gave him a certain edge.
Yeah, that's right.
Like a certain edge that was also kind of cool. So I liked it. For example, there's this scene in the carriage where he confesses his feelings to Miss Woodhouse, to Emma. And Alan Cumming is amazing in that scene. And he's just like a clumsy lover confessing his feelings. Amazing. 10 points all the way.
For Griffin.
But Josh O'Connor's version of Mr. Elton gets really mad.
Yes.
And he's okay, you don't like me, so stop the car. Stop yes. the carriage. And I like that touch a whole lot. So
yeah, he gets off the car. He's a bit more dignified. Yeah, Alan Cummings is more a little bit more ridiculous, a little bit more playful. But just so well done. Yeah.
Just so well. So okay let me make my choice. I'm gonna go still for Alan Cummings.
Okay.
Next, Mr. Woodhouse. Let's make our choice on Mr. Woodhouse, and I have to make a remark here. Mr. Woodhouse is the father of Emma. And maybe this would play a role in our decision.
Yeah.
It was played by Dennis Hawthorne in the old version, in 1996 version, and by Bill Nighy in the 2020 version. And this is exactly why I included this question in the game.
Oh, really? Because of this one, I have to say, as much as I love Bill Nighy, and he's the most kind of like most British of British actors, in that he's eccentric, elegant, refined, quirky, all those things at the same time, I have to give it to Dennis Hawthorne. And it's just because the way it was written. The 2020 is just too much of a caricature for me. And he played it that way. And no, it didn't quite work for me. Where Dennis Hawthorne played a warm, older, aging dad that is going on and on about the same topic and that Emma has to protect. Essentially, Emma doesn't want to get married. And one of the reasons is because she wants to take care of her dad until he dies and be there with him. And he is the much more classical dad that's warm, that's kind. For me, this is an easy one. Dennis Hawthorne.
Okay, it's an easy one because I give it to Bill Nighy.
All right. Why is your reason?
I give it to Bill Nighy because I found that he played a bigger role in the story. In the older version, Of course, he's pretty much in the background, and you know his existence and the role he plays for Emma, but pretty much in the background. And in the 2020 version, he gets a little bit more to get a little bit more off the stage. And I loved him, and I loved this touch of what you mentioned is a little bit comical, of course. And this is something that we didn't talk about so far. It's the newer version is a little bit more satirical, a little bit more comedy.
Yeah,
edges on the comedy, and of course they play a lot with that, and I love that. I love that which role he plays at the very end in the main love scene between Emma and Mr. Knightley.
I
gave him all my heart just because of that scene, because he was always sitting by the fireplace, and he still felt a draft somewhere. And his servants always had to put some screens around him to block the draft of the chilly air. And they used this up so well in the last scene. I don't know if we should give it away right away.
Yeah, we can maybe.
Or maybe when we talk about Miss Knightley, we can talk about it.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Very so good. This is so why I give it to
1 because point for Gryffindor,
1 point for Slytherin. Very good.
Right.
Next question. Mr. Knightley.
All right.
Mr. Knightley.
Okay, let me just this is gonna get good. All right.
So Mr. Knightley is played by Jeremy Northam in the 1996 version. And by Johnny Flynn in the 2020 version. Which one is your preferred choice?
Gosh, neither.
So we have to make a remark. Mr. Knightley is, as you described at the beginning, a good friend of the family, and he's always visiting Emma. And he is a good friend as well to Emma, but also to her father.
Yeah.
He is also very, very rich. He has a huge house, huge state house.
Yep.
He's the classical gentleman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he likes Emma. He sometimes finds her a little bit spoiled.
Annoying, yeah, and spoiled.
Mm-hmm. Well, she can be very spoiled sometimes. But as the plot says, at the end, they do find each other.
Yeah. This is a very hard game. Gabby, this game has been very difficult because the movies are quite different. And I thought when I was making my notes, I found something that I can use here to support my argument why I don't like Mr. Knightley from 1996 movie. He's older than Gwyneth Paltrow. So the actor, Jeremy Northam, is 11 years older than Gwyneth. And you could see it in a way. You could see that he was older. You could see, mm-hmm. And I was like, why would she be interesting? I mean, he was dashing and beautiful and very refined. And obviously, he was the only person who confronted her. He mm-hmm. was the only person who brought her down a couple notches mm-hmm. all the time. Like, hey. He was mm-hmm. the most sincere, and I think that's his most beautiful, his honesty and
quality.
And
yeah,
that's his best quality. How honest he is, and he's a. If we're thinking Jane Austen heroes, like romantic heroes, I think he's one of my favorites because he is very natural, warm. He's yes. kind. He's honest. He's sincere. He's kind with everybody. He's fair. He's a very desirable romantic hero. And I was like, oh, he looked... In comes Johnny Flynn in the 2020, and he's portrayed as extremely sexy. This is the sexy Mr. Knightley. I still lean towards the 1996 movie. He's such a gentleman. He's such a kind gentleman. And he's much less conflicted. I can choose. They're so different. Mr. Knightley in the 2020 is much more conflicted and bumbling. He loses some of his swag.
Contenance, yeah.
He loses some of that. Maybe when we talk about the overall movies, Well, maybe by a slight edge, I'll give it to Jeremy Norton.
Okay.
Slight.
Very good.
What about you?
I also very funny. Very, 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 very hard. This is not an easy question for me.
Mm-mm.
Like Mr. Woodhouse, that was easy. I get your point with the age difference between Jeremy Northam and Gwyneth Paltrow. I get that. It was also a little bit like, okay. But what I like about them, and how this is the thing, we cannot see him alone as a satellite. We have to see him in relationship to Emma.
Yeah.
That we could see a lot more of his interest, of his own personality in the 1996 version, how much time they spend together, mm-hmm. how much common interest they share.
Mm-hmm.
They go for walks, they do archery, they play music, they share so much time together. And then you get to know him much better.
Yes.
And at the end, when they finally find each other as a couple, you know, you can completely identify with, okay, this was meant to be. This was a relationship that was meant to be. They really had a lot in common.
You are so right.
That I struggled a little bit with the second, the newer Emma.
Yeah.
That this time of bonding was not really explored enough, long enough. So that we don't get to know Mr. Knightley that well, even though we know.
Mm-hmm.
But in that film, we don't get to know him that well. And funnily enough, I thought in that second film, Mr. Knightley is a touch too young. He was too contemporary to Emma for my taste.
Gabby, can I add something?
Yes.
This is amazing because I went and looked and it's like, okay, they have to be close in age. Guess what? Johnny Flynn is 13 years older than Anya. So he's even older.
So he's even older. And I thought they were too contemporary.
Yep. Me too. So so the point was lost. The point I was
the point was lost.
Was lost. It's like, I cannot support my argument with this.
You cannot support my argument. Nevertheless, I like Johnny Flynn a lot, and he gave the entire film also a very mature touch, because as we said, Emma was a little bit too spoiled, too arrogant, too rigid girl, kind of like, and the key scene at the very end when they finally kind of really accept to each other, yes, we are more than friends and we like each other. And this is what I wanted to describe before. The scene happens in the house of Emma. I'm talking about the 2020 version.
Okay.
It happens in the house of Emma, and they're at the fireplace together with Mr. Woodhouse, as they would often do. And Mr. Woodhouse somehow realizes that there's a certain tension between Mr. Knightley and Emma. So he again comes up with this draft issue, and he says, there's a draft and I need a screen before my legs. And Mr. Knightley immediately snaps that what he wants to say. So he helps to put the screens between Mr. Woodhouse's chair and the sofa where Emma is sitting. And of course, he switches to sit next to Emma. So they are divided by the screen, separating them from Mr. Woodhouse. And in this scene between Mr. Knightley and Emma, and then we have Johnny Flynn and Anya Taylor-Joy, for me, it was so well done, so delicate, so subtle.
Mm.
And this is why I tend to give the point to Johnny Flynn, because he acted with such a... with such a dignity, with such grandness. He was there, the gentleman, you know?
Mm.
It was very nicely portrayed, and I have to say that I cheated a little bit because I saw some of the director's comments on this film.
Okay.
The scene was planned differently, and the idea of the screen was brought in by the actor of Mr. Woodhouse, by Bill Nighy. Let's do something with the screens.
Wow.
And when they sat there, I think it was the cinematography director, he said, why don't we let, one of the producers, he said, why don't we let Emma give Mr. Knightley the kiss first? And this is very 2020, that the girl takes the first step. This was a very clever move. And I like that a lot. And how he dealt with the entire situation was very gentlemanlike. And I liked him a lot because of that.
Very good. One point for Slytherin. Very good. Come here, you're Slytherin. I am a Gryffindor. What are you?
I'm totally Gryffindor.
Are you a Gryffindor too?
Totally. You will see.
Another point for Gryffindor then. Okay.
Another point for Gryffindor. Yeah. Okay, next question. Harriet Smith.
No, I'm gonna say Toni Collette because she's a brilliant, 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 brilliant. She's just brilliant.
She's just brilliant. She's just brilliant.
And not to take anything away from Mia Goth, I think it's just the way they portray them are completely different. Funny enough, in the 1996, she's played much more caricaturesque way than in the 2021. But I still think Toni Collette is just so memorable. She's just so memorable. And she does such subtle things in how she reacts to things. She's so funny, but also so vulnerable. And I don't know. I just love that performance. It's one of my favorite performances in the whole movie. Toni Collette is just a treasure. What do you think?
I also go totally for Toni Collette. I didn't have to hesitate at all with that question. As I said, her advantage is maybe also because I think the version of Harriet in the 2020 film was a little bit too silly. They played her down too much and didn't do her justice, you know?
Yeah, I still think the actress was so good. I was like, she's so great, the young actress that plays Harriet Smith. Yeah. I really love it. It's completely different. It's a completely different
take. It's a completely different take.
And I think she's very, she does a great job. But I still, you know, much more memorable.
Yes.
Toni Collette, yeah.
Yes, I liked her. I liked her more. And she's more, stately. I don't know. she had a certain radiation that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving fast to the next one. Frank Churchill. Short description of this character. Frank Churchill is a mystery member of the entire society. He's the son of Mr. Weston. And they talk a lot about him, but he's never in town. And Emma gets the impression that for some reason they want to invite him always to town to meet her because it might be a good match for her. So she was kind of super curious to meet him because maybe she was also attracted by the mystery. And Frank Churchill had other plans. Anyhow, Frank Churchill, the mystery guy on this story, is played by Ewan McGregor in the 1996 version. And by Callum Turner in the 2020 version, which is your choice.
I'm going to show my age once again. Ewan is from my time. Ewan McGregor is an obsession in this part of the world. Ewan. I love him. He's just so playful in this character, because the thing with Frank Churchill is that he suddenly finally appears and he just swoops everybody off their feet with his charm, and he quickly befriends Emma, and he's like all gossipy and just charming, and she's very puzzled by this guy, and yeah, he's like a duplicitous guy, but I love Ewan McGregor. I think he's funny just to see him in that movie. It's like, what are you doing in this movie? Shouldn't you be transporting? Like, what? And he has his long hair.
Thank you for mentioning that. You know that I also saw a lot of interviews while researching. And Ewan McGregor didn't want to, he told years later that it was a big mistake to make this film because he had just done Trainspotting. And then he did this because at the moment he thought, it might be funny, but afterwards he hated it.
It's
not entirely my style. And then he mentioned that, of course, since he had done Trainspotting before, they made him wear a wig in the episode.
That's why the hair is so funny.
Their hair is very funny.
It's terrible.
He was wearing a wig. It was terrible hair. But anyhow, I agree at 200% with you. Ewan McGregor is just amazing. And he gives it a certain naughty touch to the character.
Lord,
without making him
caricature.
Yeah, but it wasn't like, I don't know, you know, the version of the 2020 Frank Churchill, played by Callum Turner, a little bit that you think he's somehow not trustworthy.
Yes.
And that didn't come through with the older Frank Churchill play with Ewan McGregor. You would have gone along and you would have said, this is really a very friendly guy, charming, funny, smart, adventurous guy. I would love to make friends with him. And with Callum Turner's Frank Churchill, you go, okay, this guy is somehow suspicious. So yeah. I go for Ewan as well.
Yeah, and one thing is, I think it's just how the again, we go back and back again, how these characters are written is completely different. In the 1996 movie, Frank Churchill, he's not portrayed as a bad person. The bad deed that he does is that he was engaged to the beautiful Jane Fairfax in secret, and they had been in society acting out like they were not engaged, and then suddenly everybody found out they are engaged and they had been engaged for a while. And that's, you know, it was very, you know, a terrible thing to do because you kept people in the dark. But in the 1996 movie, okay, this is something that is justified and he's not a bad character. Where in the 2020, Mr. Knightley very clearly objects to everything that Frank Churchill represents. So I'm not sure which one is truer to the novel.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
In the 2020 version, Frank Churchill is much more presented as an antagonist to Mr. Knightley. So he's more duplicitous. You can't trustworthy. And let's just say the modern actor. I'm just gonna again sexier, and I think it's just the casting and how the choices that they made. Throughout, like if you look at this night, it's just sexier, hotter, etc.
They might have something in mind when they cast these actors.
Hotter,
yeah, of
sexier,
course. I mean, Callum Turner is a very, very handsome, very, very handsome young man.
Very handsome actor, yeah.
Yeah. Very good, Nene. We're nearly at the end of our game. Now come the more objective topics.
Can we be objective? I
don't see the hard facts. Tell me your impressions on costume design and cinematography, and which one do you like best?
Yeah. I have to say... my goodness, you look at the 1996 film and it's impeccable still. It looks beautiful. And it seems, without me being an especially, it seems truer to period in that the... so we're talking about costume design and cinematography. Yes, the cinematography of the 1996 film, wow, outdoors, beautiful, beautiful outdoor scenes in the summer and a lot of darker interiors. Of course, lots of candles, no wicks, but lots of candles. So darker interiors in the 1996. And the costumes, you know, you can really tell the classes. But I think in the 2020, it's just like an explosion. It's just so in terms of costume design, I'm gonna give it to the 2020 film. It is so exquisite. You can watch this movie on mute and just look at the costumes. Truly, truly astonishing beauty. Absolutely. I know I'm not talking about authenticity, true to peer. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm just talking about the beauty of craft and using costume as a visual medium to tell stories. I mean, you can just pause any moment on this movie and be amazed by the beauty of what the people are wearing. And yeah, this might distract, but it doesn't. I hate movies when you get so into the costumes that you forget the story.
Yeah.
You know, in this movie, it almost happens, but it doesn't. Costume design, I give it 20 just because of the beauty. Cinematography, wow, I think I almost go with a new film. And maybe it's just the copy that I have. I saw a copy of 1996 in Prime. It looks good. The 2020 looks spectacular. I mean, and they have sumptuous shots of the outdoors. Actually, you know what? I'm going to give the cinematography to the 1996 one.
Okay.
Costume to 2020 cinematography to 1996. And I'll tell you why after.
Okay. This is a tough one for me. It's a very tough one for me. Because what you mentioned, the costumes of the 1996 version were very true to the period, as well as the cinematography. Yeah. The entire interiors, they make it
darker.
They made it darker, which I loved. There's a lot of scenes where there's only sunlight comes through the window. And you can really say, okay, of course, they only had candles. So of course, as soon as sunset was coming, this must have looked like this. I love that touch. And they made it very classical. They said, okay, this is an 1815 film and it should be like this. So very, very true to every detail to the period. Whereas the 2020 version was a little bit more daring. They were a little bit more playful. In costume design as well as in cinematography, in both, the costumes were they were audacious. They were not true to the period.
Sure.
There's a lot of scenes where they only went like a little piece of color, the women, and then the dress there was no connection between the color and the dress.
Yeah.
I found that very unusual, and the choice of color was also very unusual. The promotional poster of the 2020 Emma is Emma wearing a ochre yellow coat, which is for us as period film lovers, kind of an unusual color, but it's amazing. And a lot of the hairdresses, the hair pieces were also very modern. So of course I had my skepsis at the beginning. It's like, okay, this is not true to the period. But I have to say that there's one scene where the costumes really took me completely, that I was like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful to watch. There's one scene where Emma goes to the school of Harriet to visit her. I'm talking about the 2020 version.
Yeah.
And she goes into the room where all the girls of the school are playing a game. And all the girls are wearing very soft and delicate dresses, simple dresses, because they were like in an internet school.
Yeah, like a girl's school.
Like a girl's school, like an onboarding school.
Yeah.
But wearing pastel colors. And this collection of all these pastel chiffon gowns was just so, so beautiful. That I thought, okay, they did it really, really well. Even though it's, as I said, it's not quite true to the period. I think it's a little bit too modern, but it was just really beautiful.
It's
a tough one. And cinematography, one have to say, okay, I think this is a taste thing. Either you really like it to be absolutely true to the period and you like the classical style, that you are completely within it.
Yeah.
Like in the 1996 version. Or whether you say, okay, I'm open for new stuff.
Yeah.
The 2020 version has a lot of more girly elements. They made a lot of rooms look much more girlier, with a little more flowers, a lot of pastel colors, and not so much the classical portrayal of such a period in a film. Yeah,
yeah, like the heavier rooms, the heavier decoration rooms. From the 1996 has like heavier rooms, heavier decoration, more where the here we're talking about more production design, I think, more than cinematography. In terms like the 2020, I noticed like it's more. It seems even earlier, like 1996 Emma looks really 1815 or around, where the 2020 seems a little earlier, like even 18th century, more the Georgian style, and more like brighter rooms.
Brighter rooms, exactly.
Less clutter, and I don't know how true that is. I have no idea. It's just visual.
It's just visually, it's beautiful. The chapel, there's a lot of things happening in the chapel, and the chapel is so beautiful.
Yes.
It's very modern. It's tough for me to say. I'm going to go costumes for the 1996 version. I guess I stick more to the true of the period.
Okay.
And also the hairstyling was very audacious in the new one. But the visuals of the 2020 film... I always like it when there's something new that is kind of throwing questions at my mind. And I like that. I like all these pastel colors. I found them very beautiful. So I'm going to go one point for the 2020 version.
All right. What about the production in general? Like, should we move on to our rating?
Production in general. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the production in general should go to, my goodness, it's just such a gorgeous movie to see. The 2020 film is truly beautiful to watch. It is really, really beautiful. I don't know. I think it's just maybe the copy that I saw. Like I rented the 2020 film and I saw the 1996 and it's not a remaster. So maybe it's just a matter of the copy. I think the 2020 looks so gorgeous. However, I don't know. Don't make me choose.
Okay. It's also tough for me because I loved everything about the 1996, everything that has a depth.
Yes. No, I'm going to choose.
Yes.
I'm going to choose the 1996. And here is why.
Go ahead.
We might have to edit a lot of this, but we are passionate about these two movies. The 1996 movie is very much in this pastoral world that is represented. Highbury, I think it's called.
It's Highbury. It's a fictional town, yeah.
Yes. And it's a very pastoral place. And there's the scenes of Emma in her house with her dad. I forget what the name of their state is. I forget. But there's a lot of scenes that happen outdoors. There's a lot of scenes where Emma is walking to town with Herod, when they're walking back, when they're going to picnics. And there's a scene that I love, and it happens in front of one of the stores. And there are all these farmers with their sheep on the street, like in with the little fence, and you can hear all the little sheep, and you can hear the sounds. I love the sounds of the 1996. Emma is so, it transports me to a British, like a countryside would have sound in the town. You have all the farmers with their things and their animals walking around. I felt so, so real. So yes, I'm going to give it to, and just because of that scene where they're talking and they're walking and, you know, everything that's happening behind is marvelous. You have numerous people selling their things and it's just so, so well done.
Very good, Nene.
1996
production. Okay, I'm gonna go. I don't know if this is counting into the production part. But the picnic scene, we've talked about that before, and this was a big turnoff on the 2020 version. For my period film lover soul, it was a total turnoff. Why? Mm-hmm. We mentioned already in season one, in our first episode, why do we love period film so much and why did we enjoy so much watching
See Where You're Going.
A Room with a View back then when we were very young. And I said, I loved the view of green grass prairies. And I dreamt as a kid of making a picnic on a soft, juicy green grass. And
dewy green grass.
Dewy green grass. This has been like a cliche of mine. I love picnics on very green grass. So there's a picnic scene which is very important. We have mentioned this before. And the picnic on the 1996 version is just amazing. It's impeccable with all the blankets on the grass, on the pastries. And it's just a feast for the eye. Whereas the picnic on the 2020 film, either they had to improvise on that day or they didn't get the permission to film this on a proper grass. But it hurt in my guts to see this picnic was not taking place on a green grass. It hurt. It was hurting in my eyes that they were putting this picnic on some dirt.
Dirt.
And this destroyed the perfection of this beautiful scenery completely.
I 100% agree with you. I was like, no. What's happening here?
Yes. What's happening here? It didn't even look comfortable. It looked horrible.
Yeah, I would not like to be in that picnic at all.
So I'm going to give that point to the 1996 version.
Let's
take
away 1 point from give it back to Gryffindor.
Okay, Nene, so we have, if I may recall, we have gone through the main characters, we have gone through cinema, costume design, and production, and let me add quickly, we have 14 points for the 1996 version that we have given between these categories, and the 2020 version got 5 points from us on the categories that we discussed. So rating Emma, Mr. Woodhouse, Mr. Elton, Mr. Knightley, Harriet, Frank Churchill, cinematography, costume design, and production, we had a clear winner on the 1996 version of Emma. Now, this was this was just a game. Now, give me your rating on wicks and candles. How many wicks and candles do you give each Emma?
Okay, I'm going to try to be brief because we're totally gone here. So, 1996 Emma, I'm going to give it... I'm going to give you a nine. It is an extremely beautiful period film with a classic Gwyneth Paltrow performance that has heart, humanity, nuance, depth, a beautiful performance, extraordinary production design, unforgettable performances by Alan Cummings, Toni Collette, almost a cameo by Ewan McGregor. Just beautiful. Nine. It's a classic. It is a true classic. And it's not one of the most talked about anyway. From the 90s, right? From all those video films from the 90s. I'm going to give the 2020, I'm going to give it an 8. Because there's a lot of things that I love. I like about this movie, how sexy it is. And I want to talk about the pants. I want to talk about the men's pants. Because they're very, very sexy.
Go ahead.
So if we're going to rate the pants, I'm going to give all the points to the 2021. I'm talking about the men's pants. Yeah, there's no women's pants. All the pants. Get all the wicks and all the candles. So all the 8 wicks and candles go to the men's pants. Extremely sexy, beautiful, amazing. I'm joking, but not really. That is a really. I think if we retake this movie on its own, we need to talk about how sexy it is, because there's real heat.
Yes.
There's real sexiness that the other one that did. But and I love the fact that this movie was made by a woman.
Of course,
it's this terrible. It's terrible because I pick movies whether they're made by men or like most of the time I'm choosing things that are made by women, mm-hmm. consciously. Like I'm gonna watch something made by a woman. But I think the portrayal of Emma faults a little bit for me. It's not so nuanced. It's hard to understand her motivation. So the yes. 2 weeks that I'm taking, the 2 weeks and candles that I'm taking away is because of the portrayal of the main character. But everything else is impeccable. It's a dream. This movie is a dream to watch. What about
you? Gosh, yes, all the scenes in the houses. As I said, pastel colors. I'm completely into pastel colors right now. And the 2020 version gave me a lot of pastel colors in every room and a lot of flowers. So I love that. Nene, I am pretty much on the same level as you. I also think that the winner is the 1996 version. I'm going to also give it a 9, the 1996 version. The only point that I extract is Mr. Knightley.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As I said, it's a beautiful relationship. At the end, I am very happy that they find each other. But as so often with Jane Austen's, maybe because she on purpose made the age difference so big always mm-hmm. between the main lovers, yeah? It's always a little bit hard to get into the mood, yeah? Mm-hmm. So 9 points to that version. And I'm going to go for a 7 for the 2020 version.
Okay.
And yes, it's a little bit kind of sad. Well, we shouldn't say like that. We did a very fair analysis right now, so it's already well argumented. It has a few flaws that we cannot look over. The depiction of Emma is hard to believe. Of course, it's very sexy on the choice of the casting, but obviously that didn't do the job. Yeah, mm. And the picnic scene completely broke.
Your heart
broke my heart. They had done so well until then, and they just make such a faux pas. I no.
I'm taking a full week of candle for that dirt.
For the picnic scene. You gave a full candle for the pants of the man, which I completely agree.
My pants
are amazing. There's one scene where Mr. Knightley comes very, very conflicted back home mm-hmm. and he undresses and he lays on the floor.
Oh, Lord. Lord.
That was a very good scene.
That was a very good portrayal of pants.
And I have to say, the kissing scene between Harriet Smith and Mr. Martin on the 2020 version is also so, so beautiful.
I agree.
There's sunlight, she's leaning against the wall, and Mr. Martin is so soft and gentle. And you feel the attraction between these two persons so, so nicely, so beautiful. The two key scenes in the 2020 version completely won that category, which yeah. we didn't mention.
Why do you think we have a category for best kiss, like MTV?
MTV, exactly, best kiss. For me, it was both kisses, the 2020 version.
Anyway, this episode is already quite long, but we are reviewing two movies. So let's just do it. Best kiss. Best kiss, definitely the 2020. There's a lot more chemistry. And you know, it builds up. It's beautiful done, beautifully shot. Because he's a woman behind the camera, perhaps.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, you know what? That kiss between Harriet and Mr. Martin, so beautiful. I think it shows respect yes. to the characters. Where in the 1996, poor Harriet, she's still very silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's much more respectful at the end, but yeah, we will not be seeing a beautiful sensual kiss in the 1996 mm. one. And even no. the kiss between Mr. Knightley and Emma is nice, but it's not as hot, let's just put it that way, as the 2021. It's really well, beautiful and sensual and well shot, and it is, it's just really believable and really, really sweet.
Yes.
And sexy.
And sexy. Both kisses. Yeah. Go to the 2020.
Two more points. But still, Emma, which is the heart of the movie. But can we go back to the pants?
Is there anything you'd like to add?
The cream color. The very tight. And they're more from the earlier period. Because if you look at the 1996 one, they're wearing full trousers.
So you have a point.
And I think this is very, very intentionally done to show these men were young, strong, sporty people that were on horses. And I think it's very intentionally done to show the characters are more sexy, more physical. In fact, there's a whole... a dance scene where the 2020 leans more into the sensuality, and I love that. There's a there's a hand on a waist, very nicely done.
That was very nicely done. So okay, we have to give the 2020 the points for sensuality.
Sensuality
and kissing. That was much better.
It definitely takes it.
Okay. Beautiful.
Is this the end of the discussion?
I'm afraid we're pretty much at the end. But we have a clear winner. The 1996, with all the characters and everything, got a little bit more weeks and candles from our part. A total of 18 weeks and candles compared to the 15. To the 2020 version. But they are both gorgeous films. And maybe it's a thing of our age. We're another generation. Maybe the younger generation feels more appealed to the 2020 version with a sexy Josh O'Connor and with a sexy Callum Turner.
Yeah.
And a super handsome Johnny Flynn. Maybe we're behind our time.
Yeah, it could be. I think my choice of Ewan McGregor says it all.
Totally. Very well, Nene. Thank you much for this passionate and super funny conversation. And I'm glad we clarified all these questions
between us. I missed this, Gabby, and I enjoyed it very much. And I do agree this was challenging to discuss two movies, and hopefully we can edit this properly. But thank you so much for making me think about these two movies in a different way and such a fun way.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
See you next time. Stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morgan Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.